You are listening to the For the Bros Tech Podcast, episode 304.
Welcome to Season 8, Episode 304 of the Perlo Bros Tech Podcast. Today is September the 11th, 2017. I'm Matthew Dean Perlo, and embracing the inevitability of fall is my brother, James Perlo.
Dude, I am so excited for fall. We have a ton of wood. I want to burn it, but it's like way too hot to do it right now.
Yeah, it's still sweltering. We publish these shows the short
sweltering day,
and it is the middle of the hottest summer ever, evidently. it's pretty bad. I'm excited for the fall.
What temperature is it right now? Do you know that?
James, I do know that. It's so, for starters, it's 9 o'clock at night. So that should give you context of what you think the temperature should be. And right now it's only 84.
We are 83.
Jeez. But It was well over. It's been well over 100 the last like 3 days in a row.
Ugh,
it's brutal.
That's pretty hot.
We're gonna have like a $300 PG&E bill this month.
Lucky you.
I know. Yeah, at least we've got AC.
Yeah. Do you think about our parents? They don't. Oh, that's insane.
No, that's fans. They're great. Oh man, but I. We haven't been able to fix that problem yet, James. So with technology, we're gonna be focused on a different particular problem this week. Like every week, we're gonna do a deep dive into one area of the tech industry. To do that, we're gonna take into account the companies involved, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course, the technology they're developing. Before we get into the heart of the show, James got a short disclosure he wants to throw away.
Yeah, I founded and work for HP, but do not represent HP or any of their opinions. And it doesn't really matter because they're not creating any self-driving cars.
Yeah, well, there we go. Cool. So what are you, self-driving cars. What's the deal there?
Yeah, I want to give an update on Waymo this week. I read a really interesting article, and I think from The Atlantic, and by somebody, Alexis Madrigal. Sorry, Alexis. And so I thought it was just super fascinating what Waymo is up to, and we're going to walk through it.
Cool.
But before we do that, I want to make sure everybody's on the same page. And so if you could for us, like, what does it mean to be autonomous car? What does it mean to be an autonomous car? And like, yeah, tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so we've talked about this before on the show some, but I'll cover it one more time because it's kind of interesting. There are, you know, the easy way to think about it is sort of a car that drives itself. Nobody's in the car. It's on the freeway. It goes from point, you can tell it, hey, go here. It'll go there without anybody involved. That's the easy one to think about. That's a very complicated problem, and we'll get into why that's a complicated problem. And there are a number of steps between a person driving a stick shift and a car that drives itself. And they call those the levels of autonomy. And there are oftentimes described as, 3 to 4, depending on who you talk to. We'll break it into 4 levels, with a 0 level, which is no automation, which in my book means there's actually 5 levels.
I was going to say, I thought that was 5. Okay, all right.
So the first is no automation. This would be cars that, or the driver constantly performs all aspects of the dynamic driving task. No system intervenes, only those that warn the driver. So this would be the case.
My Jeep.
Yeah. This would be the case of maybe you have a backup camera that beeps if you get too close to something. That would be the very extent of it. That would be no autonomy. The next one is driver assistance. The system can take over either steering or acceleration and deceleration. The driver must continuously carry out the.
So is that like cruise control? Is that?
That's interesting because at the 0 level, cruise control still exists because you set it, but it just locks in the acceleration.
Okay.
Cruise control where it does the lane following, Or does the actual like accelerate
speed up, slow down, which I would love that.
I know, yeah.
I would love a 5, but yeah.
Right. That level has become pretty common amongst a certain tier of car. If you're paying more than $30,000-$40,000 for a car for today, probably has that feature built in.
Okay.
Me neither. The next level is the system takes over both steering and acceleration in a defined use case. So this would be the case of lane following and accelerating instead of accelerating braking. So now it has sensors that are sensing the world around it, and it's reacting to it. And what's important here is that cars are 3D objects, whereas lines are obviously require some sort of a camera. So you're really incorporating a number of different technologies to do both of those things. So that's the next step. But outside of that, it doesn't really know what to do. Number 3 would be the system takes over both steering and acceleration, deceleration, and a defined use case. It is capable of recognizing its limits and notifying the driver. So this is where Tesla is for, like, if you buy a Tesla, this is where Tesla is right now, commercially. And in this case, it's like, this is why people will sit there and, like, read on their, like, watch videos and stuff, because it will beep and scream at you if something is going wrong, and it has, it will try to change what it's doing based on, and it's like it says, it's just more aware. The driver does not need to monitor the drive, but be ready to resume control given within a given time frame if the system so requests. And I should say, it's probably the way that these guys are defining it, they would probably say this is actually a step beyond what you could get in with Tesla currently. Certain types of, like, a great example of this would be
Well, it probably depends. Like, if you're on a freeway that's moving pretty freely, you don't really have to pay attention. I would imagine city driving, it's a different situation.
Right. And that's where Tesla's
defined use case.
This is what Tesla would really like to be able to push out in the next generation, new generation of Model 3s that are coming out. This is, I think, the level of self-driving that they're really pushing is... It can drive a lot in a lot of different conditions, reading signs, reacting to all sorts of different stuff in the roadway. But it will also just let you know, hey, you're going to have to take over here because I can't handle whatever situation. I can't see yet.
Right.
The next level, level 4, would be the driver can hand over the driving or the entire driving task of the system in a defined use case. So this would be, you can tell it, take me from home to work in this city. And when the weather conditions are whatever. So it's capable of doing everything in that situation. It can mitigate issues, but it's limited. And then the final one is the system can take over the entire dynamic driving task in all use cases. It doesn't matter the weather, doesn't matter the city, it can figure out how to get from point A to point B safely. And that is really the case where driver doesn't need to be in the car anymore.
Got it.
And that's level 5.
Oh, man, I want to get to level 5.
I know, right? Come on, now. Cool. Yeah.
Huh. Okay, all right. Good to know. So one of the big companies that is currently working on making this a reality is Google.
Right.
Or... it's not Google, it's technically Waymo, who is part of the parent company Alphabet, who also owns Google, blah, blah, blah.
Well, and they're now being held by the holding company 26.
Right.
Because there's 26 letters in the alphabet. It really got into that whole alphabet naming thing.
That's really weird. Dude, seriously. So there was this cool article on The Atlantic that was kind of profiling the depths at which Google is going in order to get their self-driving cars working.
Cool.
And I think it's interesting. There's some things you find with Google where they're very much willing to push out kind of a beta product and be like, yeah, good enough. It's an experiment, kind of kicking around, see what you think. And then there are other situations, self-driving being one of them, AR being another one, where they're like, we will solve every single corner case known to man before we release a product, period.
Right.
And their
logic behind that is that autonomy will make things more dangerous until it's fully autonomous, right?
Fair enough.
Because what they're saying is, and we've talked about this before, but this idea that if the car can handle 90% of the driving cases, and the only cases that it can't handle are the hardest cases, then for most people, most of the time, they won't be practicing driving until it's an extraordinary situation where it'd be most difficult for people who are practicing driving all the time. And
right.
And so they're saying, if you can't get to 100%, then 90% is more dangerous than 0%.
It's kind of like the when we had the solar eclipse. Unless you can get to 100%, then it's spectacular. If all you get to is 99%, it's all right.
Yeah.
It's even worse, though. It's detrimental to look at it, right? Maybe that's the way to look at it.
Well, and yeah. I mean, not everybody has an opinion. Tesla is going the other direction, but we won't talk
totally
about that yet.
Totally. All right. So I'm looking at the clock. I think we want to, before we jump exactly into what Google's doing, who is this episode brought to us by?
This week is brought to us by birthdays. Everybody's got at least one a year.
At least.
We couldn't be doing this show without birthdays because it's what keeps us alive. Or are we keeping it alive? Bum, bum, bum. So go out and get a birthday wherever your birthdays are sold and help support the show. Thanks.
Excellent. So like I hinted at, Alphabet or Waymo is looking to cover every single corner case. And you can go out in the streets and you can drive around and collect a bunch of miles. But one of the things they found was that those are what they would call boring miles. Like almost all of them, right? Like, yeah, big deal. So this one lady,
they're boring because they're just they're normal. They're safe. There's nothing crazy going on. There's no challenge to it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there was this driver where she would come up with a situation where the car would struggle with it, and she would then go, "Huh, that was weird." So she decided one day to take the initiative, and they would go out to the amphitheater drive parking lot, where the amphitheater is, where they do, you know, concerts and stuff.
Yeah.
And she was like, let's try to re-simulate this and like figure out what made it difficult, because they were getting a lot of information just from the drivers. And so they started doing this test and she started collecting a bunch of different props like cones and signs and stuff like that, and was getting a few drivers out there to participate. And they kept trying to challenge these cars. Well, they started running into some sort of issues where A, they wanted to start driving faster, and they couldn't. And then B, in the summertime, they started hitting concert season. They're like, ugh, this is lame. Because they couldn't do it when there was, you know, prep for a concert's happening.
Right.
And so Google was like, you know what? This is a great idea. And so they bought some land out in Southern California in the middle of Nowheresville.
Yeah.
And started building test tracks, essentially. And what they would do is they would identify a situation where the car struggled with it, and then be like, let's recreate that. And it's, they said, the person doing the interview was like, it's really weird, because like, you feel like you're in a city, you feel like you're driving around, but there are no buildings. It's just the road and the sidewalk, and then nothing. And it was like, huh, that is weird. And so she goes, it's kind of fun. You pull up, there's just like, it's just a, like a chain link fence with fabric you can't see into it, kind of like a construction zone, which is like, in some ways, that's what it is. It's just like, and you run and you come in, and there's a motor pool there. She's like, there's a ton of cars. She goes, the only weird part is there's this really weird, like high pitched hum, which are all the LiDARs going off. Mm. And she's like, it's just, I will have to get used to that eventually, but that's a new one. And she's like, but that's how that is. She said they all kind of look the same, except for one, which had a bunch of red X's all over it. And they go, yeah, that's the level 4 car. We want to not confuse that one with any of the others. It's like, oh, that's awesome. And so they literally, like, they'd come up with situations and were like, let's drive the car on it. And so what they found is that Google is driving a ridiculous amount of miles relative to any other company that's out there.
Right.
And it has one of the measures of success is how many times did they have to have an intervention, right? When did the driver have to take over?
And the significance of that is they don't measure accidents because they don't have accidents.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And their intervention rate is something stupid low, like 0.5% or something like that. It's crazy low. And so like per thousand. So anyways, so they were just like, the miles are too boring. So now they're putting on all these miles for specific tricky situations. And so this, the reporter got to, they're like, yeah, let's do a ride along essentially. Like, here's what we're going to do. We're going to get onto this freeway. We're going to get up to 45 miles an hour. And then we're going to have someone cut us off. And we want to see how the car reacts. And so she was like, all right. So they got going up. The other car came up beside her. And then, boom, cut off in front of it. The car hit the brakes. The autonomous car hit the brakes, slowed down, and, you know, kind of did its thing. And they got done. And she was like, oh, that's pretty good. And the engineer was inspecting the data. He was like, nah, it's a little hard on the stop there. I didn't like it. Let's do it again. And she was like, we did it like six times in a row. But they were collecting data and information. And she goes, there was this one roundabout that was apparently super tricky that they recreated this roundabout because the cars they found could handle a one-lane roundabout pretty easy. But when it became a double-lane roundabout, which I guess there's one in Texas like that, it just, the car was done-ski. And so she was like, all right, we're going to recreate this. And they have all sorts of things for that. So they've got this, like, it's this village out in the middle of nowhere where they've got cars driving everywhere. They're literally paving roads. They're replicating situations. That in itself is absolutely crazy. Well, then it gets a little crazier because then what happens is you get back to the Google campus. And by the way, that place is called Castle. I don't know why, but that's what they named it. And when they get back to the headquarters inside of X, which, by the way, their company website is x.company, which is kind of
pretty good.
Yeah. They like their alphabet thing, as we have discussed. What they have is it's a simulation, essentially. And it's called CarCraft. And they have something called X-View on their screens. And essentially, the car is collecting a ton of different data. And I think what we've talked about in the past is they've used this before where there would be a situation where the car wouldn't know what to do. And then it would tell the driver to take control. And then what they could do is then simulate, here's what the car would have done. Does that make, I think you've heard about this before. And so that was their big thing, was like, they could say, we can have an intervention, not put anybody at risk, and then just run the simulation to see what the car would have done and then decide, okay, was that, did we want it to do that or not?
Right.
And they're like, and that was good. And then they could tweak the rules and then run it again and see how the car reacted until it did what it wanted them to do. And so that was the very beginning of it. And now what they're doing is they're combining Castle with that software to say, we've created all these super tricky situations. And the cars have logged, like that one where someone cut them off. They're like, we've logged it six different times. And now, not only can we say, what would the car have done? Which, by the way, they know because the car did it. But now what they're starting to do, and this just blows my mind, they're creating fictional situations that are even harder or more complicated. And what they're saying is they're doing, they call them fuzzing. But I'm like, it's a Monte Carlo simulation, but whatever. Where essentially, they take a situation similar to it.
What's a Monte Carlo simulation?
Okay. So a Monte Carlo simulation is where, like, you might have more than one input into your model, okay, which, like, they do with cars, obviously.
Right, yeah.
The road, the people, other cars, other stuff like that. And then what you do is you come up with a variance tolerance for each of your individual inputs.
Okay.
It could be, like, plus or minus 10% or something like that. And then what happens is you then randomly vary those inputs by whatever that threshold is, and you do them all randomly, and then you might do a ton of simulations. You might do like 1,000 simulations or something like that. And then each of those come up with an output. And at no point is it ever the extreme where, like, well, maybe every once in a while, where, like, they're all the max variance.
Right.
But you end up getting, they might all offset some or something so like that.
In the car cutoff example, it'd be the speed of the distance of the car in front of you that's cutting it off, the speed that you're coming on the on-ramp, things like that.
Each one of those. Your speed, factors. The car's speed, how close it does it to you, the time of day, right. Is there anything else on the street? Are there other cars around? They can enter in all those different variables. And what they're saying is, and I don't know if I can find it fast enough. I wasn't quite ready to do it, but like they were talking about how they literally would they would drive their miles and do their thing. They could generate up to 800 different scenarios just on like a four-way stop.
Nice.
Okay.
That's a lot.
Yeah. And she was talking with this professor who was like, yeah, they got to do in these simulations. And, it was, here we go. They literally can do like 20,000 scenarios based on that one situation.
Wow.
Because you're messing with all the different variables and all the different ways trying to see the outcome. And then what will happen is the computer runs it all. And then all it does is it flags situations that the engineers think would be interesting based on certain criteria that they've set.
The ones that are quote unquote not boring.
Yes, exactly. And so they're able to specifically hone in on those non-boring situations. And then what will happen is, and then it kind of self-feeds itself back, where they might come up with one of those, and so they'll build it out on Castle and actually do it and actually run it in real life and test see what's going on.
Yeah.
And so it's this feedback loop. So it's one of those things where they're trying to tell you, like, you know, we know that they drove last year, what was it, about 424,000 miles, and they only had 272 disengagements. Like, yeah, now they're literally running millions of miles every day in a simulation. And then once it learns something, it propagates out to all the other cars. It's super crazy. Now, one of the things they've said is, you know, with one of the benefits of having a search engine that just pumps out cash is that you can afford to put a $70,000 laser on top of a car, whereas you get other companies like GE or Ford where they're still thinking like consumers can't necessarily afford a $70,000 laser on top of a $40,000 car. And so they're trying to come up with like quote affordable solutions, whereas Ford is not worried about that right now. They're just trying to solve the problem in general, and whatever it takes, we'll do it.
Well, it makes sense too, because it's like it's a different problem. One is how does the car see? The other is what does the car do with the information it sees? They're really different problems. And the LiDAR is basically saying we're gonna shortcut the seeing problem. It'll be able to see really, really, really well.
Right.
And then what we'll do is the next problem, and while that's happening kind of in parallel, the machine learning guys working on the other side of Google trying to figure out how to build a search engine, you know, so that you could point it at any object in a city and it'll tell you what bridge you're looking at or whatever, or what flower you're looking at. Those guys are unintentionally maybe building the very tools that the Waymo guys are going to end up integrating into their cars,
right,
and marrying those two problems. And I shouldn't say unintentional. I think it's very intentional.
Right. But pretty crazy what they're going through to make this happen. You know, it's hard to say if they're going to be first to full autonomy. I mean, it feels like it will be. Clearly, they're taking this route, like you're talking about, where they want to get to 100% before they sell a single car. They're not really going to sell cars before they lease them or whatever, rent them out. Whatever they're going to do. They really want to get there. And they're putting in the time and effort. It's super impressive. It does feel like it's over-engineered significantly. Like, guys, really? Every single corner case? Like, really? Yeah.
Well, and I think that the interesting question there is that it's like, it's the fact that, well, you know, as we mentioned, Tesla's not waiting.
They're not.
It's like they want to put it out. And Musk's argument is that autonomy might make certain edge cases worse, legitimately. He's willing to admit that.
Right.
But it will save more lives than it costs in the long run. And you're moving it. And in his mind, you're moving certain types of deaths from, you know, if you can, if 100 people are going to die in a certain situation that happens frequently, but you can get it down to two people are going to die in a more terrifying situation, then 10, you know, 100 people were going to die. Now only two. 98, those 98 people survived, so let's push that as quickly as possible. And he's actually made the argument that there's a moral imperative to push it out as soon as it makes improvements, even if it's not perfect. Whereas Google's like,
right,
yeah, but we can make it perfect, so.
Yeah, which is what we've seen them doing with other things, like their other artificial intelligence workshops. They've decided that that needs to be perfect before they roll it out, and, yeah. Which is fine. You know, that's their prerogative. You might find stuff like with their AR core, where they had Tango, where they were, again, they were pushing for perfect, and they're going to see other companies start to experience success and maybe show them, nah, maybe it doesn't have to be. And we might see them, like, we know that they had their vans out in, was it
Arizona
or something?
It's Arizona.
You know, so they're kind of like, yeah, we know it's not perfect yet, but we're going to start getting it out there. We're going to start testing on that factor too. And I think part of that is they feel the pressure from other companies who are starting to make moves and from Tesla. So I think that happens to them where they go for perfect and then it's like, eventually they go, oh, okay. We're going to get 99%. But
right.
At least for now, it's pretty crazy. And I could see where they continue with this this project, this castle, even after they release it, just because they're going to have situations where they're going to start to collect a ton more data too. And maybe they're doing less scenarios. They're just getting what were the interesting real life ones.
Right.
And then saying, well, let's rebuild that and let's test it. And yeah, it's interesting what they're coming up with, which I guess I get. You have a machine that learns through experience, could let it experience all the different types. I kind of get this, like, it also doesn't necessarily feel like AI, because you would think with AI, it's like come up with a general rule set and then you can handle anything. And it seems like they're kind of down this like, oh no, we're just going to show it everything and then it can handle it.
Right.
Where it's like, I don't know, it's weird. Like, again, they're just going for those corner cases where for whatever reason, the rule set doesn't adequately handle that situation.
Yeah.
But well, they're getting there.
I think what's really interesting is when you compare that to like Apple's strategy with self-driving cars, where they clearly abandoned their hope of building a piece of hardware and they're focusing on autonomy. And as Tim Cook puts it, he said, we are focused on autonomous systems. We do have a large project going and make a big investment in this. From our point of view, autonomy is sort of the mother of all AI projects. And this idea of you solve the car, you solve a bigger, in order to make a self-driving car, you have to solve a bigger problem, probably. And once you've solved that problem, then you've now built out a tool set that will allow you to solve other problems. And I think, you know, what's interesting here is it's like the training program, the virtual training program. That's a particular tool that they're using for accelerated learning in this, you know, scenario. And that will have effects in other areas of what they do. Like, how do you accelerate education like that for these? And that's the sort of thing that they learn from projects with like their AlphaGo and winning at Go and
right.
Stuff like that. You know, there's a lot of cross reference stuff here, and it's yeah, and
it's cool, it's exciting, and we will keeping tabs on them for sure, and any final thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm excited to see it come. I have a feeling that we're going to cross. I have a feeling that Google's going to be forced. Their hand's going to be forced, and they're going to have to pull the trigger sooner than they want to.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be shocked at all if it's in the next 5 years that happens, where somebody gets a lot of distance on it. And I think what will happen is it won't be Tesla necessarily, but it'll be somebody else will try to sell a autonomous operating system, quote unquote. They'll sign a contract with you know, Uber will sign a contract with Ford and say, you can use our self-driving tech, you build cars for our service, and we'll meet in the middle. And Google will step in and be like, okay, let's not mess around with this. We have something that's way better. How about you use ours? And Tesla doesn't have any desire to do that. So I think that's why I suggest it won't be Tesla, even though I think they're best positioned to actually launch that kind of technology at this point. But
yeah, I could see that. Yeah, I just think it's fun too to see, here's what a company that essentially has unlimited resources, here's what they can do and accomplish. And And that's fun to watch as they continue to build it out. And I think they're helping the industry in general, which is good.
Well, and unlike Apple, they're not opaque about it. They're
yeah, that's true.
Letting you know what they're doing and how they're doing it, which is also very right. exciting.
Yeah. Well, we got a question for you guys, the listener. What we would love for you to do is answer this question either on Facebook or on our website, furtherose.com. And it is, when would you be willing to get an autonomous car? Thinking about those different levels, like what would it take for you to be like, yeah, I'm in. Let's say besides price, okay? Because we all know that's probably number one. But when would you be willing to get one? So answer that question online. And if you want to see the actual story, because there's a lot more details to it, you can check out that link on the show notes, which is going to be at furloughbros.com/304. So head on over there. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes and Google Play. And again, we would like to thank this person's name, who I can't pronounce. We're going to say Alexis. Thank you. In the Atlantic. For contributing to this. And let's see, this episode is sponsored by listeners like you and birthdays. Happy birthday to anyone who has one. We recommend you have one too. And so with that, I am James Furlough, and
it's too hot for it not to be fall.
And my sweltering brother is Matthew Furlough. And so we will talk next time.